Ms. Stewart.
Please, the floor, Mr. Scott Brown will represent Ben Williams, and Ms. Shelley Mitchell will represent the state.
All right, Mr. Brown.
Thank you. May I please go to counsel for the state?
This case is the state of Texas versus Ben Williams. Mr. Williams was convicted in a 3-count indictment. Aggravated sexual assault of a child, count one, was a contact offense. Mr. Williams causing his sexual organ to contact the sexual organ of the injured party. Count two was penetration of a female sexual organ with his penis. And count three was indecency by touching of the breast. My argument has nothing to do with count three, and it has mostly to do with count one with some reference to count two. The injured party testified. At the time of trial, she was 14 years old. She testified. It was relatively brief testimony. And on direct testimony, she testified the first time anything ever occurred between her and Mr. Williams was in 2004, 2005, or 2007, but certainly she was younger than 14 at the time because she was only 14 at the trial. So the first time anything happened, Mr. Williams touched her breast, so to satisfy count three. The second time anything happened, she testified that Mr. Williams placed his mouth on her vagina. And that testimony was in there a couple of times, except it wasn't in the indictment, so for our purposes, it's an extraneous offense. The third offense that she testified about, she said that Mr. Williams placed his penis inside her vagina, and she said that it happened 10 or 11 times. And that was pretty much the sum of her testimony on direct. On cross-examination, there was some testimony where the defense counsel asked her, isn't it true that you, the first time you told anybody anything happened, you said that Mr. Williams rubbed his front part on your front part? That came out in cross-examination. CPS worker testified, and it was summarizing what she knew of the case, was that the injured party accused Mr. Williams of putting his penis in her vagina. The cook's nurse, Donna Wright, testified, again, to the same thing, putting the penis in the vagina and that extraneous, the mouth on the genitals. My first argument is that the facts are legally insufficient to support count one, that this contact offense. And in my brief, I make the point there's really no testimony where the injured party came out and said his sexual organ contacted my sexual organ. The only testimony that you could even construe that way is this rubbing of the front part. And if you look at, especially the cases cited by the state, if you look at Soto, which is in the state's brief, and that's at 267 Southwest 3rd, 327, that's distinguishable because in that case, the injured party, you can read from the opinion, the injured party actually testified and used a chart and placed X's on the chart. This is where he touched me. This is what he did to me. And also used anatomically correct dolls. So even though the language of the injured party in that case may not have been sophisticated, may not have been the technical medical definitions, certainly the law does not require technical medical definitions, but it does require enough testimony with at least some specificity where you can meet the elements, and in this case, the element of the female sexual organ and the male sexual organ. Also in Soto, again cited by the state, there are three cases cited in a footnote there that are very important to Mr. Williams' argument. Nelson is a case at 505 Southwest 2nd, 551. Basically, the injured party got up on the stand and said that the defendant touched me on the chest. And in that case, the court said, well, what you would have to prove is a touching of the breast, and chest does not equal breast without some additional testimony, some clarification, which there wasn't. Clark, again, from the Soto case, is 558 Southwest 2nd, 887. And the injured party was young in that case, only six, and used the term front butt. And I'm sorry about this up front, but the graphic nature of these cases are important for the determination of this issue. But further defined through direct testimony, what do you mean by front butt? And gave some definitions. And from the definitions that the prosecutor provided the injured party on the stand in that case, you could see that, yes, front butt equaled genitals. And so they met the definition there. The Williams case, which is also another factual sufficiency case that went against the defense, at 9/11 Southwest 2nd, 788, again cited in the Soto case. There was two children testified in that case, and although they didn't use, well, actually they did, the case indicates they said penis at some point and private part, and then a slang word that everybody knows to be penis. We're dealing with a different matter here. We're dealing with front part, and there's no clarification on that whatsoever. And for important for our purposes, at the time of the trial, the injured party, Mr. Williams' case, was 14, not 6. And she does testify in direct and uses the anatomically correct words, vagina, penis. So from a sufficiency standpoint, and it's a legal sufficiency only, obviously, we don't have factual sufficiency anymore, which I might point out happened like the day before I had to file this brief. But even if you look under the legal sufficiency and the Brooks opinion, the Brooks opinion basically, although it's complicated, does say our old factual sufficiency gave, even though it was supposed to be neutral, also gave deference to the jury's determination. So the reality is legal sufficiency, it doesn't do anything different. So it kind of makes sense. But they also say that Brooks indicates that we have a robust legal sufficiency standard. This doesn't mean that we can't review a jury's decision and overturn it on legal sufficiency. Again, it says reviewing courts must apply the Jackson legal sufficiency robustly. And if the evidence supports a rational and reasonable finding of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, then the verdict should stand. However, if it's not rational, and if no rational juror could have found in that way, then you should overturn the verdict. And in this case, there simply was no testimony to give us any more definition of what front part was. So it's our position that it's legally insufficient. Second point deals with a double jeopardy issue, which trial counsel did not raise, but it has to do with if you do find that there's testimony, if front part was adequately defined in some way, or we can just somehow glean that that's what the injured party meant, well, that contact is still subsumed within the penetration. And that comes from the Patterson case is the lead case, and that's cited in both briefs. And the Patterson case is the one where the defendant in that case was drinking at a bar with some coworkers, ended up going home and spending the night and sexually assaulting his coworker's 11-year-old daughter, but on two separate occasions. And in that case, the testimony indicates that the injured party was able to give some good description. Here's what happened the first time he came in to my bedroom. Here's what happened the second time, and lays it out in explicit detail. And even in that case, the Court of Criminal Appeals says that a contact offense, if it occurs at the same time as a penetration offense, will be subsumed. And you can't have a conviction for the contact if you have a conviction for the penetration.
What about the state's argument that she testified to 10 or 11 penetration offenses, which would mean you could maybe only say there's contact subsumed in one of the offenses?
Well, I think that if you look at the cases, it's a very fact-specific type of determination. And in the cases such as the state cites, the Gutierrez case, the Davenport case, and to some degree the Patterson case, you have more description in at least the opinion where the court will say, well, because the injured party described these separate offenses with much greater detail, this is exactly what the defendant did to me on this occasion, 1, 2, 3. Here's penetration, here's contact, here's exposure. On this other date, it was only exposure. On this other date, it was only contact. In our case, the testimony of the alleged victim is just vague on that point. She specifically says he inserted his penis into my vagina 10 or 11 times. She specifically I believe, testifies as to how many times the mouth on the vagina, which, again, is not in the indictment, and Mr. Williams wasn't convicted of it. But when it comes to this contact, it's so vague you cannot say that that occurred on a separate date or even a separate time period on the same day. Because as we learned from Patterson, if it's two distinct instances, even if they are only an hour or two apart, then you could have a contact on one event and even a few hours later penetration. So it's not, it doesn't have to be different days. But there does need to be some testimony from some source that allows you to say this contact occurred and that's all that occurred on this particular day. And so for those reasons, and these arguments are closely related because you're dealing with number one, is front part defined well enough? And then number two, did the victim give you any detail as to when this rubbing of the front part might have occurred separately from the penetration? And it's the defense position that she didn't do that. And therefore, what that results in on a sufficiency, legal sufficiency test would be an acquittal on count one. And then also from a double jeopardy, for either argument, it results in an acquittal on count one. What does that do for Mr. Williams? It still leaves him with at least a 25-year sentence on count two and a 5-year on count three. But that's what the record supports, and that's what appellant would request this court to do.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Meserly.
May it please the court. Co-counsel. I'm Shelley Meserly. I represent the state of Texas. I just want to start out talking about the facts of this case as well. And the state disagrees with the appellant's characterization of the facts because the state's reading of the facts, the victim's testimony was actually very specific. She testified for quite a long period of time. She did testify that these events occurred when she was 11 years old, between her fifth grade year of school and her sixth grade year of school. And she starts out testifying as to what occurred in June and testifies about events that occurred all the way through the date of August 20th. And the reason that she was able to remember that date is because the last time that the appellant raped her was a week before she started sixth grade. And I, as well as Scott, I don't mean to be graphic, but the nature of this case is such that there's a lot of graphic details. If you recall her testimony, she testified how she felt when he did this to her the first time, how long it lasted. She described it the first occasion as being about 15 minutes. She said that the more and more times that he raped her, it lasted longer. And I think she described the very last event as lasting for about an hour. She described the items that the appellant bought her after each time. He would buy her Game Boy toys. He would buy her special food treats, crab legs, things of that nature. She talked about not really understanding what was happening and this is very graphic and I apologize, but that she would find white stuff in her panties and just literally flowing out of her, and she didn't know what was going on. And she described the events pretty specifically. As to the first point, the legal sufficiency, she did I think the third volume of the record on page 80, she did testify as to one particular event that happened at the beginning of the summer, kind of at the beginning of this series of events. And she talks about the appellant coming into her room and slapping her, waking her up. He puts his hand under her shirt, fondles her breast. Then he lays on top of her and he rubs his front part against her front part. That's the gist of the description. Based on that description, I think a jury could have inferred that there was genital-to-genital contact. We don't know if they were undressed, but you certainly could infer that by the fact that he reached under her shirt and fondled her breast. But besides that fact, we have 10 to 11 rapes that occurred. I mean, there's no question about that. He penetrated her 10 to 11 times, and in that penetration, he had genital-to-genital contact with her. And I think the appellant's argument is premised on the fact that evidence of penetration is not sufficient to support a conviction for contact. And I just want to refer the court to one of the cases that I cited. It's Fernandez v. State. I'm sorry I don't have the citation right in front of me. It is in my brief. I think it's a case out of Corpus Christi. And in that particular case, there was evidence that the appellant had penetrated the victim's vagina with his penis more than five times. He was convicted on two counts of aggravated sexual assault by contact and two counts of aggravated sexual assault by penetration. And the Court of Appeals upheld all four of those convictions. And again, that testimony was as to penetration. Some of the other cases that I cite in my second point of error, the double jeopardy point, the facts are the same. Now, the points of error raised were not sufficiency points. They were double jeopardy points. But if you recall in the Patterson case, the case that we've been discussing, which I would also argue the facts in Patterson is much less specific than the facts in our case. And in Patterson, as Scott just mentioned, a man came into a little girl's room. He tried to grab her hand and have her touch his penis. She pulled her hand away. Then he reaches behind her. He inserts his penis into her anus. She leaves, goes to the restroom. She comes back. He does it again. Well, he's eventually convicted on five counts, one of them being aggravated sexual assault by penetration, one aggravated sexual assault by contact. Then the third count is attempted indecency for the incident where he tried to grab her hand and she pulled it away. Now, he was also convicted of two other counts. One was indecency by exposure and indecency by contact. I believe the Court of Appeals correctly, and so does the Court of Criminal Appeals, they reversed those two convictions and said that, yes, they were subsumed by the aggravated sexual assault counts. They left and held up the aggravated sexual assault by contact conviction as well as the penetration. And we know from the facts of Patterson that the little girl was penetrated twice. There was no evidence of just genital contact. But I think, and I know this is not case law, but I mean, logically, when there's penetration, there's going to be contact. And I didn't mean to kind of jumble those two points, but as Scott said, I mean, they really are kind of, both at point one and two are kind of intertwined. Let me also talk about the Davenport case. That's a case out of this court. I believe it's a 2005 case, and I think, in fact, Justice Gardner and Justice Walker were both on that panel. The state finds that case to be almost identical to the case at bar. In that particular case, an 11-year-old girl, over the course of a summer, just like in our case, was sexually assaulted by, I believe, her mother's boyfriend, just like in our case, and I think the testimony said, and the opinion said, on a regular basis. There was no testimony that I saw or anything in the opinion that there was sexual assault strictly by contact. The sexual assault was by penetration. In fact, I think the opinion said that the appellant engaged in sexual intercourse with this little girl on a regular basis. Now, in that case, the appellant was convicted on two counts, just as we have here, sexual assault by penetration, sexual assault by contact. And this court said that based on that testimony of penetration on a regular basis, that those convictions would stand. I agree with Scott that if in this case there was only one incident of sexual assault by penetration, I agree that based on Patterson, that contact would be subsumed. But in this case, we have her testimony as 10 to 11 incidents, probably more. And she describes those incidents pretty graphically, I would say. As to the third and fourth points of error, as Scott said, I believe they're waived. I don't really have anything to discuss on those unless you have any questions for me on those issues or any of the others that I've discussed. Well, if there are no questions, the state would just ask that this court affirm the trial court's judgment below. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Brown.
Just briefly, I would like to go back to Patterson just briefly and note that on page 92 of that opinion, the Court of Criminal Appeals makes clear that it says, penile contact with mouth, genitals, or anus in the course of penile penetration will be subsumed. It doesn't make any distinction that if you can say that penetration occurred 10 or 11 times
only 9 of those contacts are going to be subsumed. It just says it's going to be subsumed. So that's the appellant's position on that. The Fernandez case that we're discussing, it's a Corpus Christi case. It's not published. Shelley gave me the Westlaw site. I don't have Westlaw anymore. But I've got the Court of Appeals site is 1309168CR. It's not published, but and I think the distinction you can make, Fernandez, from our case is that I believe the appellant was only challenging his indecency by exposure conviction. He wasn't challenging the multiple penetration offenses, and the contact in that case was a contact with the female sexual organ by mouth. So I think you could make the argument that contact by mouth and then penile penetration, mouth, female sexual organ contact would not necessarily be subsumed with penis contact with female sexual organ because it's not one act. So I think that's how that case is distinguishable. And I'm not agreeing that I'm waiving 3 or 4 by points of error 3 and 4, but I will admit that the trial counsel did not make any objections or raise those at trial.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Messerly, thank you. We appreciate your arguments and briefing today. Your case is submitted, and you all are excused.